facts are glaring. It's point blank.
It's better to have little than the blessings of God that you have much more than there's no blessings of God.
But people need to see, know, and hear.
When you return that money, you hear the message.
Whatever is not yours, even if you kill yourself, it won't come. That's my opinion.
So do share the facts on Heart Fact.
Heart Fact.
Heart Fact. With Kimberly, 3 to 6 p.m. Live on 95.1.
This is Heart Fact.
All righty, it's Heart Facts and we're talking. Thank you so much for staying with 95.1 Nigeria Info. And Debs is done with the Sunnyside Show. It gets a bit more intense as we go on Heart Facts, that is, where we look at some of the big stories driving conversation in Nigeria. And then I wrap up and hand over to the sports team. They'll take you all the way to 10. And then you catch the Night Queen. We call our black coffee, just a little bit of cream on talk night. So you know there's a whole lot more to expect. The day isn't over just yet. It's just 13 minutes after 3. Welcome to Hard Facts. My name is Kimberly Machuku. You can call me Kim or the Oracle, and I will be your host for the next 4 hours. Starting off the show as usual with the round table. I'm super stoked, super excited, you know. And just before all of you started, you've come with your gender stuff again. It's not about that. But I'm super excited that I have a female analyst with me in the studio. And the first time she's joining us on the round table, I have Miss Kemi Yusufu, Editor-in-Chief, Frontline News Online. You're welcome.
Thanks, Kim, thanks for having me. And it's a pleasure being here.
A really big delight to have you in the studio.
Thanks.
We're trying to get more women talk on some of these issues, national issues. It can't be just the men. And so I'm glad that even if it was short notice, you agreed to come.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. And I agree with you that we need more women talking about national issues, because women constitute about 50% of the country's population. And most of the difficulties, most of the challenges Nigeria is facing, women are most affected. Talk about insecurity.
Mm.
And then when you talk about people saying that poverty has a female face in Nigeria,
yeah,
that's actually true. So women should be part of the conversation at all levels.
Indeed, they should be. And talking about insecurity, starting off one of that very depressing story we're starting Monday with. I mean, if you go from Kaduna, southern Kaduna, Kagoro district, where about 23 people were killed by this bandit who invaded the community. I saw some very, very disturbing videos from that area. Then to Katsina State also, and Zamfara State, where the reports of killings and attack and community head to Imo State, where communities were also invaded, and I hear the home of the Ohanis in Dibo was razed down. Exactly. So it tells you from north to south, there's something to worry about with insecurity. You start to wonder, it just keeps going. And it doesn't look like we have a sure-bet solution in view to dealing with this particular problem. But let's start off with the Kaduna situation, because this has gone on for donkey years already. And it feels like at this point, the government is just, you know, thrown its hand up in surrender to saying, they're not literally saying that, but it just looks like it's a recurring problem that has no solution in view. Start to wonder, have we explored all the aces, the cards on the table? What next for us here? Who can really solve this problem of insecurity for us?
I don't even know where to start from, because, it's such a very, huge problem. And in talking about Kaduna, like you said, Kaduna has a history, layers and layers of, historical, conflicts, insecurity. And I think the problem is, first of all, there are no clear-cut scapegoats.
Mm.
You have somebody invades a community, kills people, rapes women, burn down their houses they struggle to build, and you don't see even one person going to jail for it. You don't see anybody. So why won't other people in 5 years' time, in 2 years' time, in 6 months' time have the courage to invade the community? And it's very, very depressing, because one of the fundamental functions of government is securing the lives and property of the people.
Oh, yes.
Is, protecting the happiness of the people. Of course, you cannot come and throw a party for all of us. But for example, if a young man can walk from his house and go and toast the girl on the next street and he comes back, he's happy. So government has ensured his happiness, because it's safe enough to move around.
Mm.
So when you have even the oldest communities in the history of mankind, the oldest, any form of organization of mankind has been to secure the lives and property of people, to stop life from being short and brutish. And in 2022, Nigeria, we cannot protect our people. And you know, some of the truth of the matter is that people in our leadership and some of us who are the followers too, we keep on begging the question. Okay, maybe you could say, what is a short-term, what's a short-term solution? What are long-term solutions? Long-term solution for someone like me is state policing. Okay, what is a short-term solution? After being a journalist for over a decade, almost 2 decades, I always think solutions. I don't like, you know, begging the question. So, short-term solutions. We decided to establish a police trust fund through,
yes,
you know, a bill, National Assembly. I think it has about 10 years lifespan, renewable. I think from last year's budget, it's been funded. So we need to look at the solutions. What are we doing to protect the people in short term? And how do we get to state policing? Because it's quite, you know, no matter how, let's stop deceiving ourselves. Nobody knows the locality like the locals.
Like the locals, yeah.
So the long-term solution should be state policing. And then for now, what are we doing with this special funding that we're using to improve policing in Nigeria? The army is overstretched. And then are we training the army maybe in the next 10, 15, 5 years because they are supporting the police? Are we training maybe certain groups or certain, you know, battalions or whatever in the army to help the police, to police, you know, because they are soldiers. They're not really actually supposed to police.
Yeah.
So what are we doing in the short term? These are the issues, you know, because...
But it doesn't even look like the government is buying into the idea of the state, the state policing one, which you said is long term. The short term one... No clarity just yet on how it's going. Because when we talk about the police trust fund, this is something that people are like, oh, the welfare of the police and the likes of it, and what it's needed to kit them and arm them properly and the likes. How that would translate to something tangible, I think it will also need some time to see that result play out at the end of the day.
Yeah, it needs a little bit of time. But there was a time also that the National Assembly supported and said you should employ more policemen. Because no matter what, Nigeria is a country. We have ASUU is on strike. Doctors are living in huts, nurses are living, so there's so much competition for the little bit of income we have.
Yeah.
But still, some people thought about it and said, look, this is a basic thing. You know, maybe some doctors might stay back if they are safe. Maybe some nurses might stay back if they are safe. The other day, you know, Abuja was attacked and professor, you know, was kidnapped.
Yeah.
So let us solve a very fundamental. So we can sacrifice and say, you can employ more policemen. I think about that time, it was the 8th Assembly, and they said you can employ 10 policemen per local government, you know, at least minimum.
Is that then when we're talking about 10,000 police officers?
Yes, and all that. So when you employ such people, we expect that, for example, since we know what our challenges are, can you start with those 10,000 policemen? You tell them from the onset, you train them from the onset, that, let's say 6,000 of you will be involved in this kind of policing, that we stop bandits, you know, that we face them frontally, that we're able to gather intelligence so that you can prevent attacks. Not that you, for example, look at Nigeria. Do you know how many policemen are doing VIP protection? Every IGP comes and says, oh, I'm going to stop people. He doesn't have the courage.
I mean,
three weeks
back, we saw a police officer helping a woman with her bag, and there was even someone.
And then recently also, there was a news story that a policeman died. He was opening the gate of a former governor, Ogun State governor, and the gate, you know, hit back at him, and he killed him on the spot. Imagine a Nigerian policeman trained with oil money, taxpayers' money, and he's going to become a gate man, you know, in an ex-governor's house. And at the end of the day, he died. All the money, all the investment, you know, gone because he's doing more menial work somewhere where he should be somewhere stopping crime. So we need to, you know, face reality. And, you know, and like you talked about the Kaduna State governor, it's quite disappointing because he's one of our best brains, you know, Olam Nasir El-Rufai. And it seems this has defied him.
It really has. Infrastructurally, he's doing great.
Doing well,
people commend him for roads and the likes of it, but
other reforms. But security-wise, he's just helpless. And I need to add that another fundamental issue is us not politicizing security. Us not politicizing security, and us not being sentimental about security issues. You know,
sentimental in what sense?
In the sense that, for example, you go and say, There was a Navy commander who appeared on channels one time, a former, you know, intelligence chief, that controversial, and he said, if you don't separate religion, if you don't separate, you know, honestly, there will never be progress.
Yeah.
So if, for example, you need to arrest somebody high up there, or you need to, you know, say the truth about, they arrest him. Don't say, oh, is this person, you can't touch him, untouchable. And oh, for example, he gave an example that when he was in, I think, the army headquarters, he had only 2 visitors defense headquarters as a general because of security. But on Fridays, the place is thrown open for prayers. You know, do you understand? So he said that, I know I shared that few days. So we need to stop being sentimental, you know, about issues of you know, security and all that.
All right, and for those who haven't heard the stories or in detail, just run through a quick number of them, some of them. No fewer than 20 people were killed in the early hours of yesterday, while several others were injured in fresh attack on three communities in Zango-Kataf local government area of Kaduna State. The fresh killing came barely days after security agencies were deployed to the vulnerable communities of the state to prevent residents from further attacks. The attack was said to have been carried out by suspected militia men in such communities as Kurumin, Masara, and Takmawai, as torrential rain poured within the community. Kaduna State Police Public Relations Officer ASP Mohammed, who confirmed the attack, described the incident as unfortunate and confirmed that 20 persons were killed, three injured. They beefed up security to prevent further reoccurrence. Investigations are ongoing to ascertain who the attackers are and to effect their arrest. And you know, this thing is, they just come out from nowhere. The bushes invade and disappear. Like you pointed out, Kemi, no arrest made. And that will leave the community aggrieved and vexed. And reprisal attack carried out on innocent people who are minding their business somewhere just because they feel the profile of the people who attack them. The vicious circle will continue until something is really done about it. And the government of the state have imposed a 24-hour curfew in Kaura and Jamal local government area of the state, looking at attack that happened in that part also. Taking us to Zamfara State, we have reports that Maroundi bandit killed at least 24 persons, including the village heads and three other traditional title holders in the early Sunday morning attacking Garna Kiawa village in Bukuyum local government area of Zamfara State. The bandit from the Gando forest in the areas have been attacking residents since January. Some attacks on several villages in the last two early this year left about 200 people dead. I remember we did talk about it also. And terrorists collect about 12 million from residents of Ghana and Nasawa Brukulu before they release about 26 people abducted. The ransom was taken to the bandit in the forest. So they go, they abduct people. Communities would have to just find a way to gathering money and paying their ransom money at the end of the day. So apparently that is still going on, sadly. And then in Imo State, it's reported that unknown gunmen last Saturday night set ablaze a vehicle belonging to a local vigilante group in Wangele, local government area of Imo State. A separate attack killed a man identified as Ugochukwu Nwachukwu, horticulturist from a community in Kwere, local government area of Imo State. The attack happened at about 11:45 p.m. An eyewitness said the vigilante vehicle was attacked when they were on security patrol within the community, but members of the group escaped from the attack. And then rampage continued within this local government, this community in Kwere, local government area of Imo State, where a man and a few others were reported to have been killed. So this is something that, like you pointed out, solution-based, we need to find a solution. Policing problem. There are a lot of places where our police are stretched thin. The military, like you pointed out, are spread thin already on their own. So the earlier we get serious with this, the better for us as a country.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to another story. It's a round table, and Kemi Yusufu is our guest analyst on the round table. Today we've started with security stories, and let's move on to the fuel scarcity situation that persists. Now, when you came in, you said something like you were thinking of all the alternative to this because of the fuel situation. It's biting hard at me also. I've been buying black market for a bit, so I understand how frustrating it is. Yesterday, my mom was calling and said, oh, congratulations, fuel in Abuja, like which Abuja, the way I stay, is still persisting. Kaduna and quite a number of the northern state, in spite of the numbers, the assurances coming from the government, it persists, and no one knows for sure how long this is going to go for at this point in time. Dealing with this crisis, energy crisis, and earlier on they were talking about even the price of kerosene going up per liter, 500, diesel, aviation fuel, everything just going up. And so far so good, nobody's head is on the table.
Like Nigerian leaders know the solutions to all of these problems. Yeah. But they just don't want to take the bulls by the horns, you know. Turnaround maintenance, obviously what is happening, turnaround maintenance failed. Although I think, if I'm not wrong, you know, Even our local production is less than 40%, you know. Or, so even if the refineries that we have done turnaround maintenance from 1999 till now we're working, it still be very low, you know. So, and then you look at today, nobody went to jail for turnaround maintenance contracts. Just like you're saying, nobody has been sacked for, in other serious countries, there's been fuel scarcity for weeks. You will think that somebody will lose his job. You will think that somebody will resign. But in Nigeria, it's just half-hearted explanations, and they continue their lives. Because, of course, people in government, the inequality, people in government are emperors, they're VIPs, so they will, you know, find fuel somehow. And then they have it, Nigeria is the one that's going to queue. And because Nigeria is a country where labor is very cheap, where you're not paid per hour, that's why the last time I bought fuel, I was on the queue for 5 hours. Wow. The other time, I was on the queue for about 4 hours. And I've bought, you know, fuel because I got tired of buying black market. You buy 10 liters, 4,500 before you make...
It's gone. At one point, I thought maybe they said they're adulterating it because it burns out really fast.
It's not anything, really. Yeah. And if you're not even, you can now imagine using your AC, you know. So the problem is that we don't have leaders who want to take the bulls by the horns. And that's also because they're not ready to make any sacrifice. Because the truth of the matter is that the landing cost of fuel per liter is much higher than 165, that, you know, the official price.
So at this point, it looks like a rock and a hard place. We have to make up our mind if we want to continue to subsidize. This all started from when the conversation of subsidy came on board. Nigerians were saying you can't stop paying subsidy if you haven't fixed our refineries and dealt with certain issues. It's like putting the cart before the horse. And the government is saying we're spending so much money. The Minister of State Petroleum has been talking about how much money we spend on subsidy. It's no longer realistic for a country that goes borrowing at the drop of a hat. So it's a difficult place where we are. To saying, you just talked about the landing cost. And then with the global price of oil going up and down because of the Russia-Korean situation, one isn't sure where we stand. It means that the differential would be significant at some point because we're bringing imported refined petrol into the country. So it's left for us to have a proper conversation as to where we stand with subsidy. Because I personally feel this is where it's headed.
We need to have a conversation, and I think government has to have a proper plan that we involve the media, that we involve NGOs, that we involve as many stakeholders, you know, to really go out there and explain to the Nigerian people that subsidy, you know, is going to be very tough. It's going to be very tough. Even at 165, it's tough for me. You know, it's tough for everybody. Yeah. And of course, Nigeria is a country run by fuel and diesel because we don't have 24 hours power supply. So from the smallest to the biggest companies, and smallest to the biggest, you know, individuals are practically living their lives based on generators, you know, of different sizes. So it's going to affect production, it's going to affect lifestyles in a way, it's going to affect schools.
It's affecting so much. Enough for Tony Elumelu to complain last week how it's biting power, energy, and
so life. You really need to, it's going to be a lot of massive, you know, engagement because we just can't continue. We're spending trillions of naira to subsidize, you know, fuel imports. You know, so can we continue? We have spending so much, we don't have money to, you know, pay for our roads, you know, improve our universities, keep our doctors. So what are we, but you know, Nigerians become, you know, belligerent because they look at it and say, pay, this is the only thing we really see government doing for us. So pay it. So but now how do we now bridge that gap? How does government go on this massive publicity? You know, how do you have leaders who look like they are part of the people? You know, because you cannot, for example, be a minister, have 5-6 official cars, you know, leave when you travel, you're in the best hotels, and you're not telling Nigerians that, oh, the only thing that is very clear that government is doing for you,
which is subsidizing your petrol.
So you can at least leave and, you know, be run your business. It's a very, very difficult, but the truth of the matter, like you said, we have to go back to that conversation. But the biggest challenge, like, for me is how to convince Nigerians that these people are telling you to sacrifice. And it's coming at a time where, under a government, where, you know, they've not done much of reforms. This government has been the kind of government that the president is all and all. He's a barometer of everything. He's a measure of competence. He's the only measure for... there's really not much this government has done in terms of reforms, in terms of empowering and strengthening institutions. So you can have, for example, Edoya Akuli tell you that, oh, this is why I'm fighting people on the drug market, and you believe her because she has grown NAFDAC. But you haven't seen this government has been led by someone who says, oh, Kemi is most qualified for this job, and that's all. You know, he's a barometer, he's a standard for everything. So it's very difficult for you now to convince an average Nigerian to say, make this sacrifice. It's a very difficult sacrifice. You've increased, under this government, gas, LPG moved from about 3738 to 8,000. Under the same government, the power increased about...
Oh, they removed tariff subsidy on power, so power has also spiked.
Yeah, increased. Even at that, I think February or so, there was just a cute, you know, message on, you know, when you open the AEDC app, say we've increased. So they've increased. So you now see David Nigerian telling you that under this, in the last 8 years, he's paying for gas double, he's paying for light double, he's not going to pay for petroleum, I mean for fuel and diesel double. It takes a lot for you to, you know, convince the Nigerian, but we need to find a way, you know, to tell them that we cannot continue spending about 4 trillion. When you, how much is your national budget? You're spending about 4 trillion to subsidize, and no matter how you look at it, some people are benefiting, very tiny, maybe not up to 1,000 people are benefiting from this subsidy. They come, they pay subsidy, they find somehow to smuggle the fuel to as far as Sudan, to, you know, talking about Togo, and it's not as far as Sudan. So Nigeria is practically subsidizing fuel for people who are not Nigerians. And then you know that the way corruption is endemic. So, and then our leaders are not very good at planning. Short term, mid term. If not, they're supposed to say, okay, part of the solution is that how do we police our borders?
I mean, we tried our hands at it when we even had to ban, shut down the border, in the southern part of the country.
I think our border is still short now. Can the customs, for example, give us a very detailed explanation, a document shows that this is what Nigeria benefited from shutting down that place? They might not be able to do that.
Well, you know, when you talked about convincing Nigerians, aside from that trust gap that is there, promises were made at the start of this administration about refineries being built and all of that. And right now, our refineries are not working at optimal capacity. Save for Dangote's refinery that we're waiting with bated breath for it to start running. And licenses they're giving some modular refineries to run. We're not refining to even service half the population of the country at the moment. And so that trust gap is there enough to say, you promised you were going to do this. You're not holding your own end of the bargain. If you're not building refineries, and we're not seeing the modular refineries and all of that government investment in this business. I know there was talk about how much, $2.1 billion for the revamping of the Port Harcourt refinery. We're still at the talking stage. It's not, I don't know the level of work. It's something to find out what money has been released and what level of work is going on there. So where we stand at the moment, we cannot refine and government has not held its own end. So to remove subsidy would not just sound like a fair deal.
Of course, man, it's definitely not a fair deal. It's really based on, like you said, their campaign promises. Because and that's what you have. I wish that Nigerians will be more involved in, you know, talking to them when they campaign. So that when, you know, like you said, it's good that they're holding them to account, you know. Because you make promises that are quite unintelligent. Out of, you know, desperation for power. You made very uninformed, very unintelligent, you know, promises. How could you, at your level of exposure, think that you can, you know, I've not been in government, but from what I read in the press, and you know, I would never have promised, you know, so easily to say I'm going to revamp the refineries, because we know that
age-long problem.
Yes, because the turnaround maintenance, most of them have failed. We meet billionaires. There are some names you can name, Nigeria. They are billionaires now because they were given turnaround maintenance contracts. But we know that those contracts fail. And then you now come and think, oh, you're the only decent person. You come with yourself.
No, the promise was even to build new refineries.
How much is it going to... Look, even the Dangote refinery, some people who are very critical will say, is a project that is coming at the wrong time. With all, I wish he succeeds for my sake and for the sake of Nigerians. But being a refinery in 2022... You know, sometimes when I'm driving along my road, I see people building all these 10-pump, 20-pump gas stations. And I'm like, okay, maybe in Africa, we'll still be using gas next 30, 40 years.
Will there be the dumping ground for a while?
Next 30, 40 years. But probably you know, people are moving, the world is moving away on dependence on, you know, fossil fuel. So Nigeria should also think that way. And talking about going back to the issue of, you know, subsidy, COVID-19 pandemic taught us that you can find modern ways of conducting. Sometimes for me, I can conduct business on my WhatsApp. I chat with somebody and we strike a deal. Either I'm buying or the person is, you know, offering me. And that's the end. And the person says, when you get your alert, let me know. And we have done, you know, seamless business. And in fact, in Nigeria now, the Nigerian law says that you can even present e-documents. So my chat with you can be a document in court if you have a dispute. So it just shows that we have to find modern ways. The other day, Malam Nasiri, talking about his own ingenuity, was saying they're going to have 4 working days in
Kaduna State.
And we're like, initially, but when I was coming to you, I'm like, these are the kind of solutions we can find that if you're going to remove subsidy, maybe in the next 10 years, if you're level this, you level this, you understand, you can stay, work from Monday to Thursday. You don't have to, you know, pay, fuel your car, or pay one higher, you know, but make sure you're available to reply emails of your director or something. Or maybe if you have to now come, you come. So you have to look for ways to find a way to run an economy, you know, more. You have to think out our way. And then, still talking about sentimentalism, for example, we hear about monkey refineries, so-called monkey refineries in the South, where people...
No, that's what they call them.
They call them monkey, you know, refineries. And there was a time I read a story from a Guardian of UK, Guardian of London, and they wrote that some of the fuel that we import from these old refineries in Holland, some places, they are very old refineries, that they are dirtier than the fuel that is refined in these monkey refineries. And I shared that story. It's an old story, but you know, I kind of somehow found it and I shared it on my Facebook page. Nobody cared. But this first casting now, coincidentally, some people bought that dirty. In fact,
the adulterated.
Four of my closest friends, I'm the only one that didn't buy that fuel. Four of my closest friends, who I'll see this evening.
Yeah.
Luckily, and that was because, you know, like I should have cut down my going out.
Yeah.
And then one of the first shows that was listed is one of my favorites. So there was a high probability that four of us, imagine a very small
circle
that. Three people out of four bought that, you know, bad fuel. So after going back, what instead of you, I saw that Governor Wike has drank off the sooth. People like that, you can get them, find them very heavy fines. Say, look, we're going to fine you. You know, we're going to give you suspended jail term. We give you 6 months, give you 1 year, but you suspended jail term. You can form an association. Form an association. Come and register. Tell us how much you sell this thing. Kind of help them formalize their business, give them like 2-3 years. But Nigeria, nobody's ready to work. You know, just find they always want
to. Easy way out.
Yeah, they just want to cut off the head for the headache. If, for example, those monkey refineries in South, 30, 40, 50 of them, tell me why they cannot, you know, maybe they cannot, so only maybe Rivers and Bayelsa they are serving. We know that one is off, you know, the portion of NNPC or anybody in Poly. So we need to, look, Nigeria needs to have. Proactive leadership. Who just sit down and think how do we solve current problems?
Yes, despite the 1.824 billion liters of PMS by the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation Limited, the queues by motorists for PMS petrol, that is, persist in Abuja and Northern State. Also, NNPC on Sunday denied claim that it had reviewed the ex-coastal, ex-depot and the NNPC retail price for petrol downward. It described the claim as fake news in a series of tweets via its official Twitter handle. Figures obtained from the company on Sunday showed that between February 14 and March 13, 2022, the oil firm released a total of 1.824 trillion billion liters of petrol in a bid to keep the country wet with petrol. But the queues in filling stations, which were triggered by the import of adulterated fuel in January this year, refused to disappear and has persisted for months. Meanwhile, the presence of black marketers who sell petrol in jerrycan is currently a normal sight in Abuja. And some filling stations in the capital now dispense PMS for above the approved price of 162-165 per litre. I was speaking with someone who was talking about the southern part and said the queues are not there, but they are paying way more than the approved 165. Per liter, or 162 to 165 per liter. A good number of these places they're buying for 180, some people as high as 200. Comfortable with
I
it as long as
I bought about 3 weeks ago. About 3 weeks, I went to drop my mom at the airport. When I was coming back through Zuba Axis, I saw a filling station, so that was dispensing food. So I quickly turned and I was very happy. I saw that it was a short queue. I thought I was lucky. So the man in front of me goes down check and he comes back and says, I'm at 225. Oh, when we go by
225.
22. It was about 22.
Wow.
Yeah. It was about 22. I did a post on that. It was about 225, you know. And I was already in the queue. And I thought about it. I said, okay, let me just stay instead of me, you know. Mm-hmm. So I joined the queue and finally bought. And I was so happy because I could buy jerrycan for my fuel, generator too. So at the end of the day, I was grateful. And I posted about it and said, I bought fuel at about 224.9. I think I was, 224.9 at the Zuba. And that, I think I took a picture. I found a way to, because there were a lot of armed policemen there. So I found, when I got out, I found a way to snap it from afar, and I posted about it as, for the records. So even here in Abuja, near NNPC headquarters, near the office of the Minister of Petroleum, near the I've managed to cram the name of the. I don't want to mention. It's not my job to. Yeah. So at the end of the day, people were happy. I was happy on that day. To buy, you know, and I'm sure that there's a way to bite me. Maybe, you know, I'll just find, anytime I have extra cash, it's on me to Ghana for 4 hours, I'll probably go there again, buy as much as I can for my gen, and, you know, continue with life. So it's not only in the South, of course, the Southeast, we've always had that conversation that
the price is always
higher than the South. But like I said, it's quite unrealistic, you know, selling at 165. That's the reality of it all.
Well, let's get to the phone lines in a bit. I see some of you itching to call. I see your thoughts coming in via WhatsApp also. Keep them coming. 0809-9930-137 for WhatsApp. And in a minute or two, we'll start to take your call via telephone. 0700-951-0000. Criticism has continued to trail Friday's controversial judgment of the Federal High Court in Umuahia, Abia State, striking down Section 84, Subsection 12 of the newly amended Electoral Act. And we've got thoughts from opinions from lawyers, members of the civil society organization, all have sort of criticized the judgment. And both the judge and the attorney general of the federation over the decision toppling one of the most significant innovations in the newly amended Electoral Act. Remember that section where the constitution says 1 month to election you can resign, but the Electoral Act is saying if you want to vie for any elective office as an appointee employed by the state based on appointment, then you need to throw in the towel at that point in time to just go even through the elective position in your political parties to be nominated. So there's a conflict between the Electoral Act and the Constitution. A lot of people will say amend the Constitution. We would rather they resigned early and not use state resources and time for the electioneering campaigns and the likes of it, where governance suffer, to having them use the office and all the privileges and all of that, then 1 month to election, you leave at that point in time. So there's a lot of criticism going towards the judge. I don't think we've seen the end of this. And, I saw a tweet by Samson Etodo questioning the power of the Attorney General to even overturn a legislation by the National Assembly. So it's also a very dicey one that be interesting. The politics of it is interesting. Do you have a thought on this quickly before we get to the phone lines?
Okay, yeah, sure. You know, I think I support the judge to the extent that why would National Assembly enact a law that they know is ultra-vires to the Constitution? That's what they did also with the Police Trust Fund. I'm a staunch supporter of the Police Trust Fund.
Okay.
But River State government went to court and said, the part of that legislation was that part of the funding for the Police Trust Fund will come for the Federation account. And you know what the Constitution says about the Federation account. So Rivers said the Constitution recognizes Nigerian police as an agency of the federal government. So you fund Nigerian police from your own allocation from FARC. How can you now collect allocation from FARC and at the same time still fund one of your agencies directly from Federation account? So why would, 109 senators, House of Reps sit down and pass, you have consultants, you have many lawyers amongst you, you have ranking members who have been, making laws for how many years, how can you go on a very, worthless journey? You know that anything that stands against the Constitution takes precedence. So why are you wasting time? You know, and I totally support the spirit and the letter behind the law that says, like you said, rightly said, why should you use government, you know, resources? You're a minister, you're this and that, and then you just, you know, you're traveling to, like Atonjera, who is rumored to have governorship, you know, aspirations. You're traveling to, you know, Kebbi, and you travel with your police oddly, travel with the, you know, everything. Because you're a minister, probably your trip is paid for by the ministry because you're a serving minister. Why should that be? And maybe you're the person, you know, another interested aspirant is a regular, maybe a businessman. Mm-hmm. He has to maybe pay for his bodyguard. He has to make his own, pay for his own ticket. And then you as minister, you're traveling with 3-4 policemen, 5, you know, having patrol car. You have your, what's it called? Your protocol car waiting for you because you're a minister. And that's what we're talking about. Nigerian leaders don't want to make any sacrifice. They don't want to be part of any reform. So that's why the populace are now saying, no, the little we get from you are not ready to shift because you guys want to act like emperors because we gave you power, we voted you in, and then you become, you know, our masters. So that, I think, you know, like some people have said, like you also mentioned, what National Assembly could have also done, you know, because I support that idea, support the thinking, is that you are even doing constitutional amendment. Why didn't you amend the constitution, that part of constitution, you know, instead of it still standing, and then you have the electoral act. You know, so I mean, like you said, this is not the end of it. The Senate or National Assembly might, you know, go to court, you know, but the truth of the matter is that it's like Itodo said, it's quite frightening that, you know, the courts, they have the power, but, you know, I think I don't really like that aspect of the job where she's not instructing. You cannot declare it, you know, ultra vires,
but not to instruct the Attorney General of the Federation
to amend or expand an act of parliament. I think that's where, you know, the judge kind
overreaching.
Of, yeah.
Phone lines are buzzing. Just so you know, the president has summoned Abubakar Ali, Minister of Power, for a meeting at the presidential villa. The president is expected to discuss the erratic power supply experience across the country in recent weeks, and they called for a meeting with Hope Uzodinma, governor of Imo State, also over the fresh violence, a wave of violence in the state. He'll be meeting with quite a lot of people. It's, welcome back, Mr. President, from London. I hope you're well rested enough, because the wahala you left behind apparently is still there. All right, 0700-951-0000. 1 minute only. Please just introduce yourself, your name, your location, and go straight to the point. Hello. 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 Okay, let's try again. Hello. All right, I don't think.
Hello, Keith.
Yes, you're welcome.
Good afternoon, Keith.
Let's talk.
Greetings to your analyst.
She's listening, go ahead.
I think I'm just tired. My tired is tired, actually. Because we just keep shuffling around the problems. This thing, we've been talking about it for the past almost how many weeks now. Nobody has resigned, nobody has been fired, nothing is happening. And, you know, it looks to me like, you know, it's a concerted effort to just frustrate the citizens. I don't understand. How can there be no lights, no fuel, nothing, flights, no flights. And then we are an oil-producing nation. I think that, okay, $2.5 million allocated for refinery in last year's budget. No, it wasn't a budget. It was an extra budgetary thing. What has happened to the money? Is any of the refineries up? You know, what are we doing to alleviate? I mean, because it just looks to me like people just wake up in the morning and say, okay, how shall we prepare them today? And they just get, okay, you people in NEPA, take lights. You people here, hide this well. And then again, about this increased cost of fuel in filling stations, it doesn't make any sense to me that somebody will go into the filling station, you are paying $2.20, $2.50 in some places in town, and you are still on a long queue. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that it's looking to me like, you know, when you keep telling somebody do something about it, do something, and he doesn't do it, it's either he doesn't know what to do, and then he should resign, or he doesn't want to do it.
So, all right.
I mean, it's as simple as that, period.
Okay, thank you.
Have a nice day.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. We truly do appreciate that. And she cannot fathom why you would have to pay way above the pump price and spend hours. But there's some filling station where there are reports of paying above the pump price, and yet they still have to queue up for some time also. I just returned from the Southeast yesterday. Petrol sells between 190 to 230 naira per litre. I got a message. Hello? Okay, let's make it WhatsApp for now until we sort out the problem with our phone lines. Call 0809-9930137. Hello?
Hello. Good day, good afternoon.
Go ahead, sir. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Okay, I'm Dennis, calling from Yanya Axis. All right, now there are so many stories there, but for the
you have just 1 minute, please.
Hello.
You have a minute, 1 minute only, so just stick to one story.
Okay, it's all right. Let me talk about the what you call it now, the working from home thing. I think as a country we are not ready to implement this working from home yet. I'm speaking from the fact that, you know, some of us are into that, and we even have applications that like the electronic document management system, which we even try to like take to some ministries. You hear people telling you, God, this thing will take money from our mouth, you know, and all that. So it's not all about having internet, having an email, you know, and all that. There needs to be a structure, a program that you can be at home, and files, it will be well secured, files will be going through. These people are not ready to do such applications yet. And talking about the cardinal person that said 4 days, if you look at it critically, you see the other undertone to that, not necessarily working from home and all that. I think that's just my summation for now.
All right, thank you very, very much. We truly do appreciate your input. Thank you very much. Let's keep trying to call our WhatsApp number if you can get through via conventional phone lines, the regular one. Call us up on 0700-0809-9930-137. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate your guest. You have spoken well. My own contribution is that my name is Julius anyway. I'm calling from Q at Jurumi since what time? 1 o'clock. I've been in the queue up to now. I'm still far away from the filling station. That's by the way. Now, concerning the killing in Southern Kaduna, I do believe that for the present governor, Elrufai won't do anything substantial about it, because he has been a one-sided person with his trances and some other activities. For instance, he told us how he went and settled with those people, killer herdsmen and some persons from other country, and he didn't settle the victims and those people that their houses and farmlands and people were destroyed. He didn't do anything about it. So concerning the subsidy issue, I do believe again that the government, the challenge of the government, the problem is accountability. Okay, they said they have removed subsidy from electricity. Did you see what they have done with the money? So even if they remove the subsidy from fuel, they will do nothing about it, because there's no accountability, just to share and to run election 2023. So
all right,
we cannot believe this government. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. So apparently the trust issue is still there, to say even if you remove it, what's the guarantee that subsidy will be removed and the money used channeled into something?
It's just like the increase in VAT. You increase VAT by about 2.5, and the only thing we ever heard was that the accountant, one high ranking person, went and married a teenager. You don't have anything to show to Nigerians that, oh, this is how much we made, because, you know, like, we have trust issues.
Yeah.
People don't trust government. People think once you become, you know, somebody in government, you become a multimillionaire, you know,
But half the time, that's what you see.
You know,
people are not altogether wrong in that perception.
No, I'm not saying they are wrong. I'm just saying that at least, you know, that's what people think. It's, like, it's conscious. It's always there. It's like, I only chose that word think, you know. So it's something that people are thinking every moment. Probably they are conscious of themselves and saying, oh, these people. So it's now even, I think it's even worse than having a mindset, because the mindset can change, but people are constantly thinking that way. So you now come and then want people to sacrifice. You know, and I think also it's because of the history of Nigeria. When the PDP was in government, so there's